From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Floating format tonight. And can an automobile run on water? Find out next hour. Now, what a story. They say now that Earth might have once had three moons. Yep, Earth might have had more than just one moon. Most probably two more, according to NASA scientists. Well, at least that's what they think. Prevailing scientific consensus holds that the existing moon was formed when a Mars-sized planet collided with the Earth 4.5 billion years ago, when the solar system was very young. So much matter would have been thrown up into space that it recollected under its own gravity to form the moon, which for millions of years would have glowed red hot as the molten rock from the planetary collision cooled. However, researchers Jack Lazar of NASA's Ames Research Center and John Chambers of the Carnegie Institution of Washington figure quite a bit of that ejected matter could have also recollected into two other small moons. Those are fixed places in the moon's orbit according to the Trojan points that the Earth, where the gravity of both large bodies would keep smaller objects in stable positions. They figure that the two small moons would have orbited Earth for about 100 million years before the slight gravitational tugs from the solar system's other planets sent them spiraling off course, either to crash into the moon or Earth, or simply to drift away off into space. Isn't that an incredible story? Well, he's at it again. The Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, says that the state of Israel is a stinking corpse and that it's destined to disappear. And this guy just doesn't stop his rhetoric, does he? Ahmadinejad further stated that Israel has reached the end like a dead rat after being slapped by the Lebanese, referring to the Second Lebanon War in the summer of 2006. Meanwhile, in Lebanon, clashes between Sunnis and Shiites in Beirut killed four people, wounded eight others. So they continue to battle there. In Idaho, Ada County emergency workers say a 13-year-old ball player suffered a heart attack, 13, as he ran the bases at Lake Hazel Middle School. Paramedic supervisor Mike Nugent says bystanders jumped and performed CPR on the teen until the paramedics arrived, the teen taken to a hospital where he is resting now. Well, CERN in Switzerland, that collider is about ready to be turned on. And contrary to what some people believe, that there is a camp out there that says we could create a huge problem, a destruction of life on this planet if it's turned on. Others say this is complete nonsense. But a lawsuit's been filed by a group of Hawaii residents alleging that not enough safety checks have been made by CERN to prevent disaster when it goes online. Well, we're going to find out a little bit more about CERN in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Walter Wagner is our guest this hour. He graduated from Berkeley with a minor in physics, a major in biology. Later, he discovered a particle in a balloon-borne cosmic ray detector, initially identified as a magnetic monopole. Though its identity now remains uncertain, it is definitely not within the standard repertoire of known particles. He is an expert in physics. He's an expert on what's going on at CERN, and he's our guest this hour. Walter, how are you?
Good evening, George. I'm doing great.
Good. Now, CERN, they're going to turn that on soon, aren't they?
Well, it's already in the cool-down stage. It's not just a single switch that you do. It's a very complex process. And the large 27-kilometer diameter ring where the particles will be accelerated has to be operated at a temperature of about 2 degrees Kelvin. That's the temperature of outer space. And that takes a long process of cool down, starting off initially with liquid nitrogen to cool it down to liquid nitrogen temperatures, and later with liquid helium to cool it down to liquid helium temperatures. And they're in that process. It'll be about another month before it's reached operational temperature. And then they have to inject beam into the ring, and that takes a couple of months to get that done, if everything goes according to the design.
Now, Walter, this particle accelerator is built underground, correct?
Yes, it is.
How far down is it?
Oh, it varies, of course, from the surface. It's on the order of 70 meters or so. It's not real deep. I believe it's in some places 100 meters. It's underground because when you are running these high-speed protons or other particles through this ring, they produce what's called synchrotron radiation. And that is a very high-energy photon, very penetrating, and it goes through several feet of dirt. And so put it under 100 feet of dirt, and you're safe.
So that's why they went down that way.
That's why, right. It makes it a lot easier. Also, it out of sight, out of mind. They don't have people thinking about it.
Now, are we correct, those of us who think that something could happen if this isn't done right, or are we way off base?
We're exactly correct, George, and that's the unfortunate part about this. There have been reviews that have been done that have confirmed the things that I have been saying. Reviews done by the people at CERN themselves, and so it has given them cause for great concern. And in addition, the great promotion of Hawking radiation as being the fail-safe that would save us is also admitted that it's, you know, a 50-50 chance of whether it would work or not. So we're looking at something that has the potential to be very disastrous without any kind of a safety net that we can use to prevent anything bad from happening.
Okay, now tell us, Walter, what's the downside here then? I mean, what could go wrong?
Well, probably the easiest one for people to understand is the potential for creating a small black hole. There are, under normal theories, these things would not be created because there's not enough mass involved in when these two particles collide together. You end up with the mass of several thousand atoms squeezed into a very small volume. And under most theories, that's not enough to make a black hole. But under some theories involving extra dimensions of space and time that we don't normally see in our three-dimensional space, one-time dimension in which we walk around in, if there are additional dimensions, it's possible that it would allow for the creation of a miniature black hole or micro black hole. And there are some theorists who have predicted that this could be the case, and that the energies, or the energy density, I should say, of the Large Hadron Collider might be able to create such a creature. And if that were the case, it could potentially grow larger and eventually, over the course of decades to millennia, devour the Earth.
Literally suck the planet right in.
Well, yes. It would not occur instantaneously because it would start off so small that it would be it would have difficulty interacting with the atoms, with the nuclei of the atoms of the Earth initially. But eventually, as it slowly did, every now and then it would interact and suck in a nucleus. Over time, it would get larger, and that process would accelerate. And so eventually it would be able to do it at a very rapid rate. And how long that would take, no one knows. There are estimates. One theorist in Germany, Otto Rüssler, has estimated it could be as short as 5 years. I've seen other people say it could be as long as a billion years, and everything in between. We really have no way of knowing.
What a bizarre story. Okay, if for some reason let me ask you this. Is that only in the event something technically goes wrong with their experiments, or by the mere fact that they get it running in 3 to 4 months, that it will be created automatically? It's going to happen regardless.
Well, it would happen automatically. Yes, it's not like if something goes wrong. They're trying to create new matter, new forms of matter that have never been seen before on Earth. And there are several different theories as to what kinds of things can be created. And some of the theories are that you could create a micro black hole. There's another particle called a strangelet that some theories predict might be able to be created as well. And it would have a similar kind of disastrous consequence, but exactly the opposite, actually. It would end up in a runaway fusion reaction, accreting atoms into itself and growing larger, but releasing fusion energy, and eventually would heat the Earth up to where the Earth exploded. Instead of imploding like a black hole, it would explode like a supernova.
Initially, if this happens, where would it be? Would it be centered around CERN in Switzerland? Is that where, let's say, this little mini black hole might be?
No. It would, if it were to make one, most of them would be at very high speed relative to Earth, nowhere near the speed of light, but still several hundred thousand miles per hour. But there would be a few of them that would be at below the escape velocity for Earth, which most people know is 25,000 miles per hour, to break away from Earth's gravitational pull completely, so you get to leave the Earth and are no longer a satellite around our planet. But if there are some that are, some of these black holes are produced with speeds below that, they would become a satellite, if you will, around planet Earth and orbit around and through our planet. There would,
how weird.
Yeah, it would spend perhaps an hour traveling through the planet and then several hours up into space and then back down for an hour through the planet and several hours up through space and just keep on in an orbit like that. Every time it sucked up an atom and grew a little bit larger, its orbit would shrink a little bit, grow a little bit smaller. Eventually, its orbit would be entirely within the Earth. Eventually orbit would start shrinking small enough that it would sink towards the center of the Earth.
Oh, maybe it's not nice to play around with Mother Nature, Dr. Wagner, huh?
Well, it depends on how you're playing around with it. There's nothing wrong with doing passive experiments or observing what Mother Nature puts out there. We have a lot of satellites out there observing nature, and there's nothing wrong with that. We have telescopes observing nature. There are a lot of things we have done, which we have very good control over, and there's nothing wrong with doing those kinds of works. Some people have said, well, if we never experimented with nature, we'd never have acquired fire, and that's true. So there are some experimentations that's perfectly acceptable. But once you have identified some problems, you have to be able to prove that they're not going to happen. It'd be the same, no different than if you build a dam over an earthquake fault, and later on you found out there was an earthquake fault there.
Right.
You're going to want to then do some additional follow-up to make certain that that's not going to be a problem. And if it is going to be a problem, you're not going to want to fill the dam up.
Walter, if this happens, if it starts to get created, how soon would we know about it? How soon would scientists be able to say, oh, no, we've done something wrong?
Well,
right away, or would it take a while before they knew it?
It would take a long while before we knew it. You would not see these things. They would disappear, so to speak. You would not detect them with your detectors because they would barely interact. Some people have referred to them as being neutrino-like, that they would pass through matter very easily, and it would take many days before of passing through matter before it would interact with an atom and then grow a little bit larger. Then the next interaction would be a little bit shorter period of time, and then the next interaction a little bit shorter period of time as it slowly grew larger. So you would never see it in your detector, in your particle detectors. And so the only way you would detect it later on would be its effects on the planet.
And it would be too big by then.
And by that, yeah, you wouldn't be able to do anything, even if it were still small. You wouldn't even feel it until it's at the very end stages of devouring the Earth. You would maybe only minutes before the Earth were devoured, start feeling earthquakes.
I mean, would we get a sign, though, Walter, that maybe, let's say, a satellite got too close to the black hole and got sucked in? And
no,
you know,
it would pass right through the satellite, and the satellite wouldn't be affected.
Would not be affected.
It would not be affected until eventually, when it's growing larger and larger, and it's entirely inside of the Earth. At that point, it might be possible you would be able to somehow detect it deep down in the Earth that there was matter, you know, rumblings within the Earth, so to speak. But by the time you would detect it, it would be at the very tail end of its consuming of the planet. It would start rapidly accelerating, and it's eating up the Earth. And you'd have minutes of notice, and that would be about it.
Give you a quote. James Gillis, a CERN spokesperson, says, "This talk is all rubbish," in response, for example, to the New Scientist magazine that says the LHC will start up this year. And he says it will produce all sorts of exciting new physics and knowledge about the universe. Now, what's your take on his verbiage, "This is all rubbish"?
Well, Gillis is not a physicist. He's a spokesperson and a promoter paid by CERN to present an optimistic view. And certainly it will produce new physics. there's a good 50% chance that if lawsuits don't work and they have their way and they fire it up, that nothing bad happens. And so, you know, he's one of the ones who's thinking, hey, look, we were right, nothing bad happened. But at the same time, you wouldn't know whether something bad had happened or not. So it's easy to say nothing bad will happen, but when you look at the physics of what's going on, there is that potential there, and there is no clear proof that these potentials for something bad to happen can occur.
Why did they make the particle accelerator? What do they want to learn?
Well, there's always the question of what happens when you bang two atoms together faster than you ever have before. You're going to make something different, possibly. And so that's the ultimate, you know, we've never done this before. It's a higher energy. We've never done it at this energy before. So let's see what happens. And that's the basic goal. Now, there are certainly a lot of theories that people want to test. There are theories as to whether or not it might make a strangelet. That's one of the theories that's out there people want to test. There are theories as to whether, and they are of the belief that strangelets would be okay to make. But we don't know that. There are theories that it might make a magnetic monopole. There are experiments that are planned for testing to see whether or not it would make a magnetic monopole. There are theories to see whether or not what's called the Higgs field is actually something that's there that creates mass, and whether or not that theory is correct. So there are all kinds of experiments people want to do to test whether their theories are right. And none of them have really thought about what the consequences of some of the other theories that they haven't been thinking about. What if they're right?
Jeez.
And so that's what I've been concerned about. Some of these other theories are downright scary. And I haven't seen any proof that they can't occur.
Well, now, what are other scientists saying about this, Walter? Anybody in your camp?
Yeah, quite a few. You know, the lawsuit that was filed, you know, and when I spoke with you last August, we hadn't gotten around to filing the lawsuit and so forth.
Right. You hinted about that.
Right. We filed it a little over a month ago. There are seven sworn affidavits from scientists and engineers that were filed in support of it as well. And we have quite a number of other physicists we've spoken with and other scientists who are encouraging us to go forward with this. They don't want to have their name out there and where they're going to be putting their head on a chopping block, so to speak. But they are saying that, yes, this is something that we need to look at and we need to examine this thoroughly before we can start this machine up. I end up speaking with a lot of scientists either by blogging or emailing with them, and I do a lot of explaining. At first, they don't know where I'm coming from. They haven't heard some of these theories before. They've been sort of led to believe that there's no problem by the PR that comes out of CERN, and as I explain to them what the problems are and the difficulties are, they recognize that, yeah, okay, there is a problem. And some of them just didn't sort of shy away. They don't want to get involved. And others end up indicating that they are very concerned about it as well.
I'd feel a lot better about this thing if you weren't a physicist, but you are. That means you know more than I do.
Well, George, everybody out there in the world has a degree of knowledge of things, and nobody shares the same exact common knowledge. There are a lot of things you know that I don't know, and vice versa. But yes, I do know quite a bit about physics. I've worked in the field for many years, and worked with some very competent people, and acquired a great deal of knowledge about how physics works. And that's what's impressing a lot of the people, even at CERN, is the one fellow that said, it'd be easy enough to dismiss this by waving our arms, except these people are physicists.
Yeah, that's right. Walter, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines, because there's a lot of people want to talk with you. They've got questions, too. So we'll give you the numbers in just a moment. Our special guest tonight, Dr. Walter Wagner. We're talking about CERN, Switzerland, the particle accelerator, and the possibility of black holes. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505 is the toll-free number to order the After Dark newsletter. And also, if you renew, you'll get the CD called J.C. Webster Rants. It's the last week that this CD will be available to you. and is bound to become a collector's item, so take advantage of it. And if you don't want to make the phone call, you can just order online very safe and securely at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Walter Wagner. This is not April 1st. We're talking about the particle accelerator at CERN, where Walter and a number of other scientists believe that we could create black holes around the planet and then something even more disastrous later on. Walter, didn't the Soviet Union at the time launch a dozen or so reactors into space? And whatever happened to those?
Yeah, Georgia, did I email you about that way back when? I must have, because not too many people know about that.
Yes, you did. I do my homework, Walter.
Yes, yes. The Soviet Union, way back when, 30 years ago or more, used nuclear reactors to power their satellites. The U.S. program used radioisotope generators. They'd use the heat from the decay of the radioactive materials. The Russians used actual nuclear reactors. This was a barely subcritical mass of either uranium-235 or plutonium-239, and they would surround it with what would look like a Venetian blind of graphite. When the blind was open, any of the neutrons being produced inside of the sphere of fissile material would escape out and not be reflected back, and it would stop the reaction. If you closed the blinds, the neutrons would strike the graphite, go back into the sphere, and cause the nuclear reaction to continue. And by opening or shutting the blinds, you could control the amount of heat being produced by this barely subcritical bomb. And they launched, I'm not certain how many, around a dozen of them that were up there. One of them crashed in Canada about 20 years ago, and they cleaned up the mess the Canadians did and sent the bill to the Soviet Union at the time. But the rest of them were parked in high orbits around the planet, and with decay periods for those orbits on the order of 300 to 400 years. So I'm not certain when they're going to be coming down, and I'm not the one who monitors those orbits. Yes, that's a concern that we will have in 300 or 400 years from now, if we're still here.
If we're still here, if the CERN particle accelerator doesn't eat us up, right?
Correct.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go east of the Rockies. Jay in Houston, it's your turn. Hi, Jay.
I guess you've seen on the news we have a large sinkhole up here in DeSoto, which is now 900 feet.
Yeah, I just saw that. If you like Florida these days.
Should we be thankful here in Texas that the funding was cut for the superconducting super collider after they spent $1 billion digging a 56-mile around tunnel? Would that have created the similar?
It would have been the exact same machine that they were building there, almost exactly the same thing. In fact, it's the same people working at it. When the funding was cut, Fermilab was going to be building the machine down there at Waxahachie. And when the funding was cut, they looked elsewhere, and they got in touch with the people up at CERN and decided that they would put the same machine in an existing tunnel and save a lot of money. So it actually ended up costing less money to do that, but it did delay it, which gave me the opportunity, more time to get my act together, so to speak,
and
raising the consciousness about this.
So the tunnel at CERN was already in existence before they started building this?
Yes, that's correct. There had been a previous collider, but it was colliding electrons and positrons. And it was nowhere near the energy of this one. And so that was scrapped. They finished the last run about 8 years back, 7 years back. I forget exactly when it was. And they then started working on installing the equipment for the Large Hadron Collider in the existing tunnel.
So would this one in Texas have been more powerful?
It would have, as I understand it, would have been maybe about twice the energy.
Wow.
And a little bit more, and that's about it.
Wow. I guess we should be grateful for cutting
something. Yeah,
well, it did delay things, and I'm glad it gave me the opportunity to get more theorists out there thinking about this. We've got a lot more research under our belt showing that these adverse scenarios are something that is an actuality that we can't discount. And so we've had a lot more time to think about it and to get this information out there than we'd had previously.
Next up, Wildcard Line Kent in South Carolina. Welcome to the program. Hi, Kent.
Hey, gentlemen. I'm really pleased to have the chance to speak with you tonight.
Thank you.
I'm a little confused on a microscopic black hole. I mean, it seems to me that, just from what I understand, isn't like a string potential compared with the known universe interchangeable, and a string potentially would create a quantum singularity. At that rate, it seems like to me the more mass you dump into a black hole, it's a paradox. Doesn't it constrict and become even smaller because of its mass and the gravity squunching it up smaller? So with that in mind, when you say you can take a few particles of an atom and make a microscopic black hole, wouldn't it be like the converse? It would be bigger because there's not as much mass to introduce the gravity to squinch it down small? You see what I'm saying?
I understand where you're coming from. And no, that's not quite correct. The black holes were first conceptualized from the idea of a star that collapses under its own gravitational pull. Normally it would take a star about three times the size of our sun, 3 to 4 times the size of our sun, in order to form a black hole. But the mathematical theory that goes along with this doesn't have a lower limit on the actual mass you could have for a black hole. It simply describes it at any mass you want it to be, and then it describes its diameter as being what's called the Schwarzschild radius. And that gets smaller and smaller with the less amount of mass you have available for the black hole. So the microscopic ones that the LHC would have an extremely tiny diameter because they would not have very much mass inside of them. They would only have a few thousand atoms worth of mass, but it would be in a diameter that would be a millionth of the diameter of a proton or thereabouts. And so it would have a very high density within its volume, but it would be very, very tiny. And so the problem is how to create one. Normally you have to have a star that collapses under its own gravitational field. But some theories show that by scrunching matter together at very, very high speed, that you might be able to squeeze the matter together tight enough that it also forms a black hole.
Do you know if Stephen Hawking has reacted to the CERN project?
Yes. I've heard one comment from him, and it was apparently he's not keeping up with what's going on. He commented that he wasn't concerned because of the cosmic ray argument, and the cosmic ray argument has been debunked initially by myself and my associates, and subsequently it was also debunked by what's called the LHC, Large Hadron Collider Safety Assessment Group, who came out with the exact same conclusion we did, that in nature, cosmic rays that would tend to mimic what's being done at the LHC, when they strike the Earth's upper atmosphere, they are moving at very, very high speed, very close to the speed of light, and if they create micro black holes in nature, the micro black hole would be traveling at the speed of light, or very close to the speed of light, and travel right through the Earth, and because they are very neutrino-like, it would not interact other than maybe one atom would be taken away from the Earth, and that would be it, and then it would exit on the other side, and we'd never be any the wiser.
Let's go west of the Rockies. We've got John at Santa Barbara, California. Hi, John.
Hi, George and Dr. Wagner. Well, I just had a quick observation that if this fellow who said that it would take 5 years to swallow the Earth,
yeah,
that would tie right in with the Mayan calendar thing.
Yeah, that's sort of bizarre. I haven't seen his calculations as to how he came up with 5 years, and I don't think you could set any firm time. I think that was an estimate that he made as to the minimum time, and I don't think he was saying that it would be exactly 5 years. Just that I think he came up with an estimate that it couldn't be less than 5 years.
I'm not sure the Mayans knew about this, but I'll tell you, it is weird how everything seems to be getting close to that date.
Yeah.
First time caller line, Steve in Indianapolis. Go ahead, Steve.
Morning, guys.
Hi.
I have no training at all in physics, but I'm hugely interested, and I'm afraid I'm not going to be as eloquent as I need to be. But for years, they've been searching for the theory that ties, the two theories together. The reason, in my opinion, the reason they haven't found one is because one of the two theories has to be wrong. And I believe that the one that is wrong is Einstein. When the automobile was first invented, the common
belief
was, thank you.
There you go.
Common belief was you couldn't go faster than a mile a minute because it would suck the air out of your lungs. Then, once that was proven false, said you couldn't go faster than the speed of sound because you would shake yourself to death. That was proven wrong. Einstein, unless I'm mistaken, said that nothing travels faster than the speed of light, and the speed of light is constant. Well, I think, once again, that is eventually going to be proved wrong, and I think that light is the key as far as figuring all this stuff out. One thing that occurs to me, and I was hoping you could give your comment on this, is that if the speed of light was constant and fixed, how do you account for the fact that not even light can escape from a black hole? If light can't escape from a black hole, doesn't that mean that light is traveling at 0 miles an hour or less?
Well, it means basically that the black hole cannot radiate energy. What is occurring is because of its intense gravitational pull within its own diameter, which is called the Schwarzschild diameter, that the light is redshifted. We know about gravitational redshifts. It's the same as a recessional redshift, and it stretches out the frequencies of the electromagnetic radiation. And if it's attempting to come out of a black hole, it's redshifted to infinity, which means that it has zero energy and therefore it can't escape.
Is that different than actually traveling at a slower speed? If you're shifting the red and the wavelength is longer, can't the wavelength eventually get long enough that it isn't a wave anymore?
Well, that's what happens. It's redshifted to infinity, and therefore it doesn't have any energy and can't escape.
Okay, Philip.
Any of the energy within the black hole has to remain within it.
Let's go to Philip in Montreal. You're on the air. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Doctor. Doctor, I'm concerned that this situation is very reminiscent of the Challenger launch decision, where you have many scientists, you know, expressing concerns. I'm especially concerned that concerning the formation of a mini black hole or a black hole of any size, that their excuse is that it will evaporate according to Hawking evaporation. And the idea there is that near an event horizon, particle and antiparticle pairs are formed by a process called Hawking radiation, and the antiparticle component goes in and annihilates some of the matter in the black hole, and that annihilation is the mechanism for the evaporation of the black hole. The problem is, pair annihilation only produces photons, which are just light. And I don't see how that escapes. I don't see how the singularity core can possibly evaporate. Any annihilation going on must be, and any evaporation going on must be occurring outside the event horizon. Therefore, the singularity core itself is irreducible. Is there no discussion that Hawking's idea of evaporation is just a thought experiment?
Well, that's what we're trying to promote, a discussion about that. I've had some conversations with some of the professors in physics at UCLA, explaining to them how it's just an idea and it can't be proven correct. I've had discussions, I've been blogging with other physicists, and it's sort of was an idea that got accepted as being, well, this is probably the way it is, to the idea that was accepted, this has to be the way it is. And they were using it as a justification for safety. And it really, exactly as you said, it's not something that sounds very plausible. You didn't have it quite right. It's either you have particle pair production, it's particles and antiparticles being produced. It's not necessarily the antiparticle that has to go in. It could be the particle that goes in and the antiparticle that goes out. Hawking radiation would be a mixture of, if it were real, it would be a mixture of particles and antiparticles, equal amounts of either coming out. But it doesn't really make much sense. It's also, Occam's razor would have you eliminate it, because there's no need to postulate its existence unless you have some kind of experimental evidence. And it contradicts basically some of our cherished concepts in physics. And so we've been stressing that it's really just an idea that's not in any way, shape, or form proven. And it's at best, it's a 50-50 chance of it working. You can read more about that on our website at lhcdefense.org. You could send me an email. It sounded to me like you've read up on this some. I'd be happy to give you some more information, give you some of the information we've developed on this.
Is there any possibility that even before this thing truly goes online, that it could explode or something could happen to it?
Well, yes. That's a big worry for CERN. When they inject these beams of protons, they're traveling at very high speed with a lot of energy. At full energy, the beam of protons has the energy of a high-speed train. A tremendous amount of energy. And if they mess up with the guiding of the magnets as it goes around in this big 27-kilometer circle, and if they don't aim it just right as it goes through there, if one of the magnets fails or something, it could just burn a hole in the side of the apparatus, which would immediately cause a large number of the magnets to fail. The magnets themselves have a tremendous amount of stored energy in them, and they would explode, and you could have a major cleanup problem, if you will, if there was some kind of problem in the acceleration of the proton. So that's something that concerns CERN, of course, and that's one of the reasons why when it's on operation, they have no people inside of the ring because of not just the synchrotron radiation, but because of the fact that you could have a major disaster. That happened once at Fermilab. They burned a hole in the side of the wall, you know, of the ring, and major problems. It was down for several months and so forth.
Sometimes I think, Walter, science goes a little too far. This might be the case.
Well, I agree. I think this is something that we're beyond what we know about, and certainly it would be nice to know the answers, but it's not worth the risk to find out those answers. There's so many other things that we don't know the answers to out there still that we're working on. We have a satellite going up this month, I believe, or it might be put off a little bit, called the GLAST, G-L-A-S-T. It's going to be searching for Hawking radiation. We should at least wait till we get the results back from that and see if there is such a thing as Hawking radiation. I don't believe there is. And there are going to be other satellites going up. We're here on the Big Island where I live. We're looking at commissioning a new telescope. It's called the 30-meter telescope. Huge telescope that will be...
See, I could handle that kind of technology.
Yeah, and this is something that's completely passive. You just look up in the heavens and observe, and then you think about what you see, come up with your ideas and conclusions, have more information, all of which is very safe to do. This is something that is potentially disastrous, and we really need to stop this at this stage anyway until we have more information on what's going on.
All right. Thank you very much, Walter. And we'll keep doing updates with you as we get close to when they truly go online with this. Up next, can a car, an automobile, run on water? Every once in a while, we're going to do a show on alternative energy with new technology, with inventors out there who are trying to make it happen. I'll be back in a moment at Coast to Coast AM.